How would you like to build high-performing teams? Sheena Aizmandiz will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Sheena is she's known as the resilience champion, leadership advisor, talent development consultant, and keynote speaker, and the CEO and founder of The Well Biz, a boutique learning and development and organizational consulting firm. And she partners with organizations to build resilient leaders and high-performance teams by aligning leadership behavior, team dynamics, and organizational culture with business strategy. So Sheena, tell us about how can someone build high-performing teams that are at the same time psychologically safe?
Fuel Podcast with Lily Patrascu shares longevity and anti-aging techniques to stay young forever, increase energy, overcome addiction, and live your longest best life ever, shared by world's most innovative alternative and traditional health thought leaders, healers, and doctors. Discover quantum healing strategies to heal your mind, body, and soul.
Hi, Lily. Thank you for having me here today. High-performing teams is really one of our groundwork's most important focus. We focus on practical strategies in building and sustaining high-performing teams by being able to strengthen their clarity, accountability, building trust within teams, and creating consistent team behaviors and habits. More than anything, the intention behind it is to shape team culture and performance by developing systems that we put in place, behaviors and communication practices that drive alignment and results.
Thank you. Tell us your 10 commandments for someone who wants to build a high-performing team that is not toxic.
I'd say 10 commandments for that would be, I'd start with action oriented, performance and culture focus, clear, professional, impactful, strategic, engaged, empathetic. I think those are eight now? Consistent and practical.
Thank you. How can someone actually create high-performing teams? Because I think when you have a high-performing team, there is a high level of competitiveness, which can lead to demotivation for some of the members on the team. Let's say if I'm selling 1,000 of something and then another person is selling 800, then that person who sold only 800 might be looking a little bit bad and might start to feel a little bit envious. So how do you maintain that high performing team culture while at the same time engaging every single person so they don't feel bad, so that they are incentivized, but at the same time, they don't start to feel like a failure in by comparison to another team member that is perhaps performing a lot better than them.
I would say the most important thing is to consider intentionally designing how the team will work together on an everyday basis, right? We always want to start with clarity when we are aligning high-performing teams. We want to be very clear on the purpose. Why do we exist as a team? Why are we together? Setting very clear goals as to, what does success look like as an organization? What does success look like as a department? What are some of those objectives? And having very clear priorities in terms of what matters most first.
So what happens when, let's say, one team member performs a whole lot better than everyone else put together? How do you manage that?
Well, we don't look at that as competitive, right? We see that as something that's part of creating a culture where everyone thrives, everyone brings their different strengths. So we always like to focus on strengths. We never want our leaders to look at their team's weaknesses. In the contrary, the reason why we focus on strengths is because that gives us the opportunity to continue to develop on those strengths and develop them to become stronger strengths that now other team members can also learn from. Everyone in a team serves as a teammate, but also as a mentor, as a coach, as a role model. So having someone on a team that maybe outperforms, say like in sales, other team members, it's not about creating a culture of competition. It's really about creating more of a culture of alignment more than anything.
Thank you. What happens when one of the members on the team outperform so much that actually the entire work gets done by one person, and then everyone else is like, okay, what do we do now? There's nothing left for us.
Well, I mean, obviously that's never, that would never be the outcome or the goal that we want to reach. More than anything, it's really about getting them to understand consistent team habits, right? And so when everyone is very clear on what their responsibilities are and what their habits are and what they're bringing to the team as a whole, that helps us understand a little better, you know, what each role represents. And when we have someone that they're the ones that are bringing, you know, they're meeting all of the metrics, they're outperforming everyone else, then we utilize that individual's characteristics, traits to for other team members to model.
Thank you. What are the worst mistakes you've seen when it comes to creating high performing teams?
I would say when it comes to some of the mistakes that we see often, I think no one wants to feel in a team like they're not part of a team, like it's not an inclusive team, especially when we're developing high performers. It's also, I would say another mistake that we also see is when there's a lack of regular feedback loops, when goals and expectations are not set properly, they're not clear and specific. So those are some of the mistakes that we see with high performers. High performers are just that, they're individuals who want to grow, who want to be developed, who want to have opportunities to be able to bring the organization to the next level. They're there as a representation. So giving them a sense of ownership is really important. And when we don't do that in an organization, then we run the risk where people feel left out, not inclusive. They don't really feel like they're part of the team.
Thank you. How can someone prevent having a team member that alienates the rest of the team?
Well, I mean, when you build a culture of accountability, right? Meaning a culture without fear, a culture that has ownership, that they understand that when something is done incorrectly, it's room for everyone to be able to grow from those opportunities, to be challenged, to be able to pinpoint how to do it better. You know, it's important to make the team feel like they're supported, not micromanaged. Being able to reflect and improve continuously on what's working, what's not working, and how do we adjust from that perspective.
Thank you. Tell us about your personal experience creating high-performing teams, either for your own company or for other companies. And tell us about your journey of how you ended up doing that.
Sure. So, you know, we believe, I myself especially, that we always have to lead by example. And so as leaders, I think that we have to set that tone. And when it comes to helping organizations that we partner with to build and develop their high-performing teams, we take our job very serious because we fully commit to meeting them where they're at. But more than anything, it's about bringing them to that next level so the organization continues to scale. You know, it's not just about growing in numbers or meeting those KPIs. It's about building an organization that's psychologically safe, an organization that will prioritize their people's needs, whether that means learning and development needs, professional development needs, or even personal development needs. So really, my journey more than anything has been in partnering with organizations that are very mindful and who prioritize these objectives.
Thank you. What would you say tends to alienate different team members? What do you feel they are not getting in the team that kind of makes them to start thinking, oh, I should really get out of here and find another organization that is better?
Well, I mean, there's many variables, right, when it comes to why people leave or why organizations have high turnover. I would say depending also on, you know, what roles, if we're talking about, say, emerging leaders, right? Right now, emerging leaders are really looking to grow and to be developed into becoming better leaders to having the opportunities to becoming, whether that means frontline or it means to become managers or possibly directors, even, you know, continuing to grow their professional career. So when someone is in an organization and they're not feeling like the organization is investing in their growth, right, equally also in their well-being, because we have organizations where some individuals have, you know, three or four roles or three or four hats that they're wearing. And so they have too many responsibilities. They don't have enough support. Their leader doesn't communicate effectively. All of those are very, very viable reasons why people leave organizations.
Thank you. What are some of the best initiatives you've seen organizations employ to keep teams engaged and thriving?
I would say some of the best initiatives are a combination of personal and professional development, where organizations prioritize those needs, where they make sure that everyone, not just the senior executives or the mid-level executives, but everyone in the organization is constantly growing and they're learning new skills and they're being reskilled and upskilled. When that is in place, we see that organizations thrive. You know, these organizations also put in place wellness solutions. They put in place well-being programs where employees have wellness initiatives that they can learn how to manage stress. They can learn how to be more mindful, how to feel more present, how to deal even with financial wellness. So all of those things together is what we see. When we see this within an organization, we see that the organization is not just showing that they care for their people, knowing that their people are their greatest asset, but this is where we see the lowest turnover. We see the highest retention.
Thank you. How can organizations leverage personality traits and for certain employees in order to motivate them to do better? Because, for example, there's people who love shining at work. There's people who love growth. There's people who love systems. There's people who love saving money. There's people who love, socializing and being part of a team. There's people who are introverts. There's so many different characteristics. How can an organization leverage all of these different characteristics and even find out what kind of characteristics does each individual team member have in order to make the most of the productivity that particular member can contribute to the entire team?
That's a great question, because oftentimes that is one of the things that is mostly overlooked, right? We see that. And so what we would say, one of the ways on how to leverage personality traits is to understand individual differences. So I would say start by helping leaders recognize that not everyone thinks or communicates in the same way. That's really important. And so one of the things that we do in a situation like that is that we like to use tools like assessments, maybe a DISC, MBTI, or maybe it's a Clifton Strengths, some kind of assessment that is very simple that will allow us to really identify these patterns, to understand what their communication style is, the way that employees make decisions, what are some of their work preferences. All of these things really help us to understand these tendencies. And so it'll give us the bigger picture of some of these high-performing thinkers.
Thank you. Have you leveraged any of these personality styles for yourself, your own company, or the company of other entrepreneurs in order to help them make the most of the productivity of the entire team?
Absolutely. We are of the habit of conducting several times a year within the organization and our own teams, all sorts of assessments. One of our favorites is the Clifton Strengths. We also do like the 360 leadership assessment. That's a way for all leaders, anyone that is in a leadership role, to better understand how they're impacting the team. So yes, that is something that we use ourselves as well.
Thank you. And can you tell us a specific example of, let's say, what you personally enjoy, or what one of your employees or one of the people from another company enjoys, and how this was leveraged in order to increase the productivity of the team?
Are you asking the question what we enjoy after taking an assessment, or what we enjoy after what specific?
So let's say I prefer working alone, okay? And I'm very task-oriented. And let's say if someone was to come and to start wasting time and ask me about the weather, you know, I could be polite, but really what I'm thinking in my head is like, why are you here? And like, you should be working right now, you know? And let's say if you knew that about me, perhaps you could leverage it in a way to kind of give me a lot of tasks, because I would be the kind of person that, you know, you would hire if there's a war, because, you know, you would know that I would be like doing the task, you know, I wouldn't be like wasting time. I would be like completely focused. Whereas there's other people who might feel like, oh my God, she's so rude. Like, why isn't she talking to me about the weather? You know? So like, how did you leverage any of the personality traits, your personal ones, or some of your employees, or some of the people that you've worked with, in order to kind of make the most of what they like? And how did that contribute to the overall productivity or success of the team?
So I would say that the objective would be to build complementary teams, right? So high performing teams are not made of similar people. They're balanced. And this is where we would grab, say, a mixed thinker with a, you know, with doers, mixed fast-paced individuals with people who are more methodical, mix assertive people with more collaborative people. So it's really kind of bringing those diverse styles and the diversity and style drives to better reach an outcome. So I would say, you know, looking at, let's say, even our own internal team, it really is about leveraging when someone has a particular strength or particular trait, we would go ahead and then partner them together to work on a specific project, because we know that having these two personalities working together, that will help us reach our objective. But obviously that has to be done through assessment. We have to first conduct an assessment to be able to identify, because not everyone's really gonna, you know, like you said, maybe someone, you're working on something and someone comes and interrupts you, and in your mind you're thinking, you know, what are you doing? I'm working. But you want to be respectful, obviously, of your team member. You don't want to be reactive. You don't want to have to respond in that way, because that could be very much so interpreted as very rude. So this is why assessments are so important, or, you know, surveys, assessments, taking pulse.
Thank you. What are some communication training that you believe is necessary for some teams to undertake so they can understand and have more awareness around the kind of communication they should be using to have the best outcomes created at work?
So I would say communication should be a mandatory, right, type of initiative in every organization. And it is not a check the box. Communication should never be, you know, a one and done. Communication is something that has to be put in place as part of the culture in terms of learning how to communicate better. Because we know that when it comes to communication, people communicate in different styles. They communicate in different ways. And so in order to really maintain effective communication within the workplace, it's very important that across the board, people learn how to handle difficult conversations, how to give proper feedback, how to manage misalignment. All of those things are very important when it comes to communication, how to be able to communicate based on, you know, clarity and active listening. All of those things are very important.
Thank you. Tell us some types of triggers that you've noticed tend to trigger an undesirable effect at work, and how can those kind of effects be avoided? For example, let's say someone rolling their eyes when you say something, or some other like nonverbal communication that leads to misinterpretations, misunderstandings, and also irritability and some other conflict.
Sure. So we know that triggers are emotional reactions. That's what they are, right? And usually those are sparked by specific situations, behaviors, maybe interactions, or even conversations that we have. And so that can cause stress and it can also cause issues within the workplace. Some of the most common workplace triggers that we see come and they stem from lack of communication, from maybe unclear expectations, someone who's feeling disrespected or unheard, maybe you know, someone is triggered because they feel like they're being micromanaged and their leader is not delegating. May a lot of the triggers also happen from poor accountability, conflict, right? Not knowing how to manage conflict or confrontation. And other triggers are also, you know, they also show up in the workplace based on change or uncertainty. Even when an organization is scaling and growing and it's really, you know, because of a positive reason, if the employees do not have the right skills in place, if they don't know how to manage this change, that can trigger all kinds of different emotional reactions.
Thank you. Tell us some personal breakthroughs or fascinating facts that you've discovered about high performance teams.
Some of the breakthroughs that we've discovered, I would say, when it comes to high performing teams is there is today more than ever, we see there is a very common ground where individuals that are high performance want to grow. I think growth is kind of the word that comes to mind, is wanting to grow, not just within the organization and growing their roles, but really wanting to grow as individuals more than anything. High performing leaders look to mentor other people in the team. They look to coach them. So we're seeing a lot of leaders today who have a strong desire to grow in the way that they communicate and the way that they're leading with more empathy, more emotional regulation in place. I mean, because after all, we spend our greatest time at work and, you know, we are with the people at work more than we are with our own friends and family. So it really is about wanting to continue to grow and continuing to develop as people as well as professionals.
Thank you. Tell us about the psychology of influence and the dynamics you have noticed. What should high performing teams learn about influencing other people in their team so that the entire team wins?
I would say, you know, leadership impact focus is what comes to mind, right? Where they focus on behavior and application more than anything. Those are the kinds of things that I think about. I think about equipping leaders with the right mindset, the right tools, in order for them to influence others effectively. So they're able to build trust. They're able to drive meaningful action. More than anything, I would say that it allows leaders to have the ability to influence with intention by understanding human behavior.
Thank you. What are some of the worst things you have seen teams implement that led to massive disasters in terms of financial disasters or the team disintegrating or people leaving or huge turnover or general demotivation?
You know, it's kind of that's a simple answer. And I'll tell you, when every time we see these two things, it never leads to success. The first thing is when organizations promote people to leadership roles without proper development. So without training, without giving them the right skills, without giving them the right tools, there's a huge disservice to that. There's a disservice to the individual who just promoted, because even though they may be very excited for their new promotion and now being able to be a manager or, you know, or a leader of some sort or director, they're excited about that idea. What they're not excited about and what they will eventually face is they'll make a lot of mistakes because they just don't have, they're not equipped with the right tools. And so that's one big mistake that we see, is promoting people without really upskilling them or teaching them the necessary tools they need so they can thrive as leaders. The other is when an organization puts in place an initiative and it's a one and done. And I'll give you an example of that. Well, we're going to do an effective communication training this year, but we're only going to do one training. It's going to be a 2-hour effective communication training. And then the organization puts that in place and never revisits, doesn't have you know, a program, something that can be measured to see the impact, to see the results. There's no assessment prior to that communication. So really, you're just putting something in place blindly without having the right information to be able to determine what are the gaps, what are the areas that need the most support, who are the people that must be present in that training. Those kinds of things, when we see that, we know that it never works. It's a bad investment. Something like that is a terrible investment. We won't even work with organizations that just want to have, this one and done type of training, because it's not a good investment of our time and it's not a good investment for the organization.
Thank you. How can companies mitigate the negative impact of promoting someone from the team? And I'm talking about the envy that can be created when perhaps, let's say, I'm expecting to be promoted and I'm not. Yeah. And instead, my friend, my coworker, Maria, from the same team, she gets promoted and I somehow feel I'm a lot better than her, or I've brought better results than her. But somehow the leadership thought, no, Maria is a better team overall, team leader, and she can motivate the entire team better. But somehow now, even though I've been a really great performer for a really long time, I'm not promoted, therefore I'm demotivated, and then I will leave. How can a company mitigate the negative risk of this happening once you promote someone from the team?
Well, that's the best way to mitigate something is to prevent doing it, right? So I think it really is about communicating to other leaders and understanding where everyone's at and putting a strategy in place. If you're not strategic in the way things, the decisions that a leader is making or that an organization is making, if they're not strategic about what the impact is, what the possible outcome will be, then obviously they do run a very high risk in having conflict, right, within those team dynamics. And that's why we always say to organizations, whatever it is that you intend to do, make sure that you have, strategically looked at this idea or this objective and made sure that you've checked all the boxes, right? You've spoken to the right people, you've taken the right steps, you know exactly, what's the expected impact, who is it going to impact, and also what the outcome will be from this decision. So really, that's the best way to mitigate. It's almost like preventative medicine, right? We take vitamins, we take supplements, we go to the gym, we eat healthy as a preventative method so we don't get sick. And so in the event that we do, then we can obviously navigate our health in a way that's more effective. It's the same exact principle when it comes to the workplace.
Thank you. Tell us about rewiring limiting patterns that team members may have that can limit their growth.
Well, we're really big on mindset. And when it comes to reframing, I would say it really is about teaching our teams how to minimize behaviors, how to build more trust, not only in our teams, but also on ourselves. And that's where the personal development component comes in. It's really about learning how we're thinking. Are we coming from that growth mindset? Are we coming from a fixed mindset, more limiting? What are some of these limiting beliefs? Where are they coming from? Where do they stem from? When you create a culture that is very strong, then you're able to create more of that self-awareness, because that's something within a culture that everybody becomes self-aware on how they're thinking, what they're thinking, and the impact that they can make on their teams.
Thank you. Tell us more about leading with confidence in high-pressure environments. How can a team continue to be high-performing even when they are under a lot of pressure?
Pressure can, it's almost like I always think of, when I hear the word pressure, I think of a diamond, right? Diamonds in the raw, the way that you get them to shine and be beautiful diamonds is, they thrive in pressured environments. And so I don't look at pressure as something negative necessarily. I see it as something that can propel us in how we can show up as the best version of ourselves. And I think that as an organization, it's really important to help our people navigate situations that are completely unprecedented. For instance, 6 years ago, we all experienced something that no one imagined happening, which was the pandemic. And we saw the result of that because organizations were not ready. Organizations never, had no idea that something like that could ever happen. So I think learning from that experience, we have to, as leaders, make sure that we have very sustainable things in place that are continuous, that will continue to not only build the trust and that interaction with, within the teams, but also being able to teach them how they can still thrive and navigate very stressful situations and still work under pressure.
Thank you. Tell us some horrible situations that you've seen happen at work. And what advice would you give or you have given to companies like that to overcome those situations?
I would say, for me, one of the most horrific things that we come across is obviously bullying, right? Bullying should be completely unacceptable at every level in any organization. And I would say addressing those harmful behaviors and doing so effectively, right? By being able to reinforce more positive leadership practices, by being able to really identify, what are some of the things that are happening and who are the people that are being affected. Bullying happens more often than we think. And the reason is because we don't, people are afraid to speak up. They're afraid to tell HR because of retaliation. They think that they're going to be retaliating against them. They might lose their job. They may lose their safety. And so I think putting in place more compliance and ethical harassment training is a great way to mitigate this. It's what helps every individual in an organization understand what to look for. Also, it's a good opportunity for them to know that if they know someone in the company that's being bullied or they're being bullied themselves, that it's okay to speak up, that it is safe to speak up. You know, being able to create that psychological safety is really important. But that's one of the most probably horrific things that we see that happen very often is bullying.
Thank you. What should a company consider when it comes to hiring people? Should they be hiring A players or B players or C players? And what would be the reasoning behind that? Is it that C players tend to stick around for longer? Is it that B players tend to be better? Is it that A players that tend to be very much individualistic, all about themselves, and a little bit more aggressive, are those better for the company? What's your personal opinion in terms of creating high-performing teams?
You know, I would say that performance focus is important, right? We also have to be practical and very action oriented when it comes to how one recruits or hires. But more than anything, I would say it's in considering people not only for their experience, but I think, more than anything, I would consider, that some of those hiring mistakes happen because we're putting people in roles that they simply are not ready for because they have not been, they have not been trained for those roles. They don't have experiences within those roles. So it's really about being very narrowing down. Again, assessments, that's another way. There's one of the assessments that we recommend. It's called the Colby A Index. Colby A Index helps you understand how people make decisions. And it's a cognitive assessment, which really helps leveraging, say, recruiters or hiring managers to understand the individual that you're considering for a specific role.
Thank you. Tell us where companies and entrepreneurs can connect with you.
We are on social. However, I would say the platform that we try to provide the most value and information would be on LinkedIn. Also, our website has a lot of information of some of the things that we do. We have a lot of stuff there for people to download. And that would be thewellbiz.com.
Follow me for more interviews with world's most innovative health changemakers to live your healthiest life ever.